A new documentary called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets revisits a murder from 2012. It happened at a Florida gas station. A white man named Michael Dunn confronted four young, unarmed black men in an SUV over their loud music. It was all just words until Dunn went for his gun and fired into the car.
Fire rescue car to the address of your emergency.
I'm at the Gate gas station at Bay Meadows in Southside. I don't know the exact address.
Okay, what's wrong there?
We had shots fired in the parking lot.
It was like pop, 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 pop.
We're listening to some of the documentary there. Now, Dunn drove off after the shooting and left 17-year-old Jordan Davis mortally wounded. NPR special correspondent Michelle Norris spoke with Jordan Davis's mother, Lucy McBath, and with director Mark Silver. He explains the title.
3.5 minutes was the time that the two cars were next to each other before 10 shots were fired. And the more I focused on this awful coincidence that the two cars pulled up next to each other, I realized that that was the heart of the film.
Lucy McBath, the question around the perception of young black men is really at the core of this film. And you discuss that in lots of different ways. There's a moment in the film where you and your ex-husband, Jordan's father, Ron
correct.
Davis, are sitting at a table, looks like a kitchen table, maybe a dining room table, and you're describing the moment where he sees your son's body.
It wasn't like he was in a bad neighborhood. He was 5 minutes from home. He wasn't late at night at 7:40 in the evening. He was with his good friends, all good boys.
Good boys.
Good boys. Mm-hmm. And within that is even sort of the question, when a young black man is listening to rap music and is dressed in a certain way, does he always get the benefit of just being seen as a good boy?
It's not likely, and especially if they're playing rap music.
Did you ever talk to your son about that? He liked rap music. He liked nice clothes. He wore his pants. They sagged a little bit. When he wore a cap, it was kind of cocked to the side a little bit. Did you ever talk to him about just that and say, you know, the world might see you and dress like that and draw certain conclusions?
Yes, we did many, many times. In fact, you know, I can remember the times that I would be calling Ron and saying, would you please talk to Jordan about pulling his pants up? You know, he just won't listen to me.
The young men that were with Jordan Davis also talk about how the world sees them. They talk about dealing with the kinds of things that all kids deal with. And yet when they do some of these things that maybe their white classmates do, they're perceived as thugs. And we should say that the young men that were with Jordan Davis that night, there was Tevin Thompson, Tommy Storns, and Leland Brunson.
People portray us as gang members and bad kids. If they hung out with us today, they would have known who the real people were. We lived in the suburbs. The struggle is not about, you know, it's 8 of y'all in one bedroom house. Your mom's a crackhead. Your dad left you when you was 2 years old. That's beyond struggle. We're talking about the everyday struggle, you know? What teenagers go through. No gas money, so you can't get picked up.
No money, period, as a teenager is just awful.
Facebook, Instagram dry, so you can't talk to no females.
Yeah.
That's the struggle.
I think for me,
that was Tevin Thompson, right?
Tevin Thompson, one of the funniest guys I've met for a couple of years. And I think for me, what I found amazing about the other three boys was there was something so poetic about the way that I myself, and then realized that, you know, the audience would too, would learn about who Jordan was in his absence through his friends. And as we got to know his friends, it left like no doubt in your head that these boys, and hence Jordan, were in no way connected to violence and thuggery and all of those stereotypes that Michael Dunn, you know, carried with him to that 3.5 minutes.
We learn a lot about Lucy McBath, about Ron Davis. We see them in their homes. We see their home movies. We see them in really intimate moments. You spend hours with them, weeks, months. We don't learn as much about Michael Dunn. We see his family members in court, but we don't hear from them. We don't see the sunrise shots of their homes or their hometown. Why not?
The initial reason was because we weren't allowed. The family of Michael Dunn, when we asked if they would like to be in the film, they declined. And they said that that was because they were too emotional and they didn't want to be seen to be weak or crying on camera. That said, we looked at the best ways possible that we had available to us to at least try to humanize Michael Dunn from the beginning. And we did that by being able to access phone calls that he made from prison between him and his fiancée.
Hello?
I have a prepaid call from
Mike Dunn,
an inmate at Duval County Jail.
How did you obtain those recordings?
Well, the recordings were able to be obtained because in the state of Florida, they are within the public domain.
Hey, sweetie pie.
Hey, honey.
Are you awake?
Yeah, I'm awake. I'm just not feeling well today.
Are you blue?
Yeah.
I was really blue this morning.
We didn't want Michael Dunn to be like the boogeyman from the outset. We wanted audience, or at least some audience members, to be able to perhaps see a little bit of themselves in Michael Dunn, to be able to have the kind of honesty to reflect on, for example, Michael Dunn saying that he felt fear because of four young black men in a Jeep next to him having an argument.
Lucy, I'm wondering what goes through your mind when you hear something like that. The filmmaker say that he wants to help the audience make sure that they can see something of themselves in the man who killed your son.
I think it's genius. There's no way you can walk away from viewing it and not really begin to consciously think about race and gun violence and, you know, just the perception of people of color.
Lucy McBath and filmmaker Mark Silver spoke with NPR's Michelle Norris. The documentary is called 3.5 Minutes, 10 Bullets.